here's a question. If you were to start evolution all over again, like hit reset way, 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 way back, how different might things be today? I mean, how random was the development of what we know as normal to our eye now?
Mm. Like, would we have wheels on our feet?
Right.
Instead of having cars instead?
Right. The sky would be the limit. I mean, your imagination just goes wild with something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun topic, and it's really interesting and, of course, really complicated. Evolutionary biologists ask this very same question, and it looks like, as best we can tell, it would probably be a sort of a mix of things, because although the mutations that happen that make the new varieties are, you know, they're happening randomly all the time, there's not an endless list of choices as to what could happen, because some things, you know, certainly won't work out and you just die.
Well, the conditions would be kind of the same, you know, the physical conditions that things would encounter.
You'd modify kind of what's already there. So it's sort of – you'd find variations on a theme, and you can see that happening not only in fossils but in modern day things. So one example of, you could say, the same basic kind of evolution happening more than once is happening now in Hawaii.
Producing different results?
Yeah. There are crickets there that are not native. They came in from elsewhere. But they do the cricket thing. You know, they make the chirping sounds and the guys call in the females and they mate and things like that. But then a new invasive species has come in there. It's a kind of a fly that is a parasite on those crickets. And it finds its prey by listening to the cricket calls.
So these crickets are encountering a new kind of predator.
Yeah.
That they didn't evolve with.
Right. And so when they're trying to call in a mate, they're calling in a predator. Mm-hmm. And it turns out now all of a sudden in the last few years, scientists are starting to find that same species of cricket there living among the others, but it's silent. It can't make the cricket call anymore. And it looks a little bit different too. The wings are a little strange. They call them flat wing. Mm-hmm. So it's like the silence of the crickets. So, and it's genetic. They can find where the marker is on there. And so you would say it's natural selection of a new variety genetic mutation by these parasites.
Right.
So that's a new thing. But the most amazing thing on our topic is that this has happened twice, because now when you look genetically, there are actually two versions of that silent cricket on the islands.
And they developed independently. So it's like kind of like in parallel. I see a weakness here. I see a problem with their scheme. If they're not making the cricket call, how do they attract a mate?
Hmm.
And will – you know, I mean, I'm thinking if they don't attract mates, then they're not going to make it.
Yeah. Well, this is an unfolding story. All the answers are not in yet. So right now, as this is unfolding, the silent males still have competitors who are making the calls. So what they do is let them take the risk.
So they're hanging out with the noisy
guys.
They're
hanging around the noisy guys, hoping they can get lucky and find a mate without taking the risk. And it's anybody's guess what eventually is going to happen. Are they all going to go extinct? One hypothesis is because insects also make odors, maybe the smell of a male and a female will replace the sounds instead.
And trick the fly. Well, that's one. So are there – besides insects, I mean, what other examples have the geneticists found?
Well, there are many, but one of the more recent ones is the big flightless birds like ostriches and emus and kiwis, these birds you find scattered all over the world unique to these different areas. Mm-hmm. And it turns out now that we have pretty good fossil records and genetics – it turns out we can find out that these were not all closely related flightless birds that then scattered to these places. It looks like the only way their ancestors could have gotten to these remote islands like, let's say, New Zealand would be to fly. And so the ancestors of these large flightless birds or small flightless birds around the world were separate, came from flying ancestors who then lost the ability to fly in multiple places, maybe half a dozen times around the world.
So different adaptations to the same sorts of problems. Thanks very much, Dr. Kurt Steger of Paul Smith College. I'm Martha Foley at St. Lawrence University.
Natural Selections is produced by North Country Public Radio with Natural Sounds by Ted Mack. The program is underwritten by the Glenn and Carol Pearsall Adirondack Foundation, dedicated to improving the quality of life for year-round residents of the Adirondack Park. www.pearsallfoundation.org. And Paul Smith's, the College of the Adirondacks, 800-421-2605.